I'm sure most of you know that's an old Hank Williams thing, and I think it's pure poetry, one of his best. I want to get into a little more talking, if I may, and maybe do another one. It depends on how long I'm out here. But one thing I wanted to get to was a thing that I did Friday called the Arkansas Traveler that I'm going to do again today because my options are so limited by my voice. I hate to do things twice, but I think hopefully most of y'all weren't here Friday night and didn't hear it, so you won't be quite so severely buffeted as otherwise. Two of the things that typify frontier humor when I ever ran into it or in some of its successors, you can still pick up a lot of it if you keep your ears open. But a lot of it is done by means of a very great exaggeration coupled with a completely deadpan face, so that somebody will say the most outrageous things with a face with absolutely no expression. This showed up in the Miami Herald supplement yesterday morning, one that I'd heard before about a hurricane that came in and blew so strong that it blew the wells right out of the ground. Or a cornfield that grew in soil, it was so fertile, it grew so high that you could see lightning bugs at noon and owls hooted all day long in there. And if you've been around Florida much, you know there are three hierarchies of hogs. There is your tame hog in the field or the pen, and there's what they call in the Southwest the razorback, which runs loose and gets his own stuff, and there's what you call the piney woods rooter that is just as mean as a junkyard dog, and nobody bothers with him at all. And those piney woods rooters are supposed to be so used to grubbing for a living in a desolate environment that they can hear an acorn drop 2 miles off and run fast enough to catch it on the first bounce. And when the guy builds a hog fence, he can't hold them, but if he wants to hold a razorback, one way to do it is you build the hog fence so crooked that when the hog roots under it, he comes out on the same side. One more, this is sort of connected to country humor anyway. I don't know where this thing came from, but it's something I heard. I'm going to go get a chair, and this chair is supposed to be a round hole, okay? I'll explain that. Okay, that's a hole. Here's what the thing is. In this particular part of the country, there was an old joker whose behavior was just perfectly outrageous. You know, he was wedded to the bottle, and he was like Pap Finn, Huck's father. You know, he just scandalized the community. And he had a habit of lurching around at night singing at the top of his voice when decent folk were abed. You know, and this one decent person in the closest house to where he roamed was getting awfully tired of it. And this old boy used to cut through the graveyard. You know, he had no respect for living or dead. He'd sing to the dead as well as the living. He'd lurch through there at all hours of the night, hey, singing at the top of his voice. And here's this man, you know, just biting on the pillow in a rage over here in his house, listening to it all. So he finally decides he's going to cut that stuff out once and for all. So he goes out there. Tonight is going to be the full moon. Lots of light. So he goes out there and he digs a hole and he works, sports fans, at that hole. And he doesn't dig a round hole. He's smart. And he does not dig a square hole like one might to trap a wild animal. And this is why he doesn't. He is smart because he knows that this particular daddy rabbit does not go in a straight line. He goes very much like a sailing ship tacking up against wind in the following manner. And when he does that, you see, he misses the hole. And this guy knew that his luck was going to be bad enough so that that dude would do that. He would lurch right around that hole, wash out into the poison ivy on this side, thunder back across the path, up into the laurel thicket on the other side, and the round hole would still be sitting there, utterly unused. So he put him a slit trench out there, a long one. He knew just what that guy's radius of lurching was. So he figured when he lurched around the front of that thing, when he was tacking across the path, the end of it would trap him, and in he would go. Now, there was a second reason for making the hole that shape, and that was that he wished it to imitate a grave. So here he comes, you know, that night. He's coming through the graveyard, and he's in his usual condition or worse. And sure enough, you know, this guy'd put little sticks all over the slit trench, and he'd put grass over it, and he'd put sand over that, and he just spent hours making that thing just letter perfect. And here he came, and sure enough, boom, right down in the hole this guy went. And he's sitting down there. Trying to figure out what happened to him, and all of a sudden, here comes neighbor, and he's got a sheet over him. Eye holes cut in the sheet. Oh, you know, he comes up to the edge. He says, Joe Mayfess, Joe Mayfess. Yeah, he got enough sense or enough strength to look up, you know. Joe Mayfess, this guy turns up the volume a little bit.
Huh?
What are you doing in my grave? That'll fix him. Got to get up and say this. He's looking up. He said, well, what in the world are you doing out of it?
Very short.
Okay. I won't do what I was
going to
do at all.
Okay.
I just tell one. Would you rather I just stop at that point?
Well, what you going to do with that fiddle?
Nothing. If that would be wrong, I just probably.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, your time's up.
Thanks a lot, folks. No, there are a lot of performers here. I'll come up at 1 o'clock to the Tower Auditorium and I'll play it up there.
Thank you for buying that time for us. That was great. It was good. Now we'll break the tempo here and have a little Indian dancing. Osceola from Naples, and just one dancer, two dancers. Obi Osceola and Tina Osceola, and I never in my whole life saw a Seminole so gorgeously arrayed, but we are just happy that they're here and that they're going to titillate us with the Indian dancing. Let's clap them onto the stage.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We are Seminole Indians from Florida. We just come down for Folks Festival, and we're always proud to be here with the rest of the folks. Then we're going to do a little Indian dance for you called American Indian Dance. We do have our own ceremony dance, but we don't dance in the public too much, so because we keep that pretty well secret. People well know they're invited to go if they... people know tape recorder, stuff like that. We do keep that pretty well secret. But this intertribal American Indian dance, we dance all over the country, all the Indian dance. And we like to do a couple of numbers for you. First is Tina Marie Osceola. She's 11 years old. She's going to do the girl dance. It's called a North.
Wouldn't it be fun to see all the pictures that get taken at Florida Folk Festival?
Yes, ma'am.
Turn around. Well, sir. One time, a long time ago, there was no earth And there was nothing nowhere except on Saturday when the Lord and the angels gathered to have a celestial picnic, and they'd have the fish fry and bile custard. And one big Saturday, everybody was out to the fish fry, eating fish and bile custard and carrying on, till all at once the Lord tastes some custard that didn't suit his taste. He say, "This here custard ain't made right. It ain't got enough firmament in it." And the old angels say, "Well, excuse us, Lord, but we done used up all the firmament. There ain't another drop in the jug." He say, "Well, look here. Every time I come to one of these here celestial picnics, seems like I got to pass a miracle and make some firmament. I bet I'm going to make enough firmament this time to last a whole heap of Sundays." So the Lord read back, and he say, "Let it be some firmament." And when I say, "Let it be some firmament, let it be a whole heap of firmament." Well, sir, you just ought to see the firmament. There was so much firmament around that all the mammy angels and the little cherubs got soaking wet. And the mammy angels gathered them up and say, "Well, we got to take these here children on home, because if we don't, they's going to get bad colds. They shaking like they got a buck ager now." The Lord say, "Oh, now here, don't go busting up the fish fry." He say, "I'll dry out them angels." So the Lord read back, and he passed another miracle. And he say, "Let it be the sun to dry out these here cherubs and these here angels." Well, there was the sun hanging up in the sky. But as soon as they got dry, they got wet again because they were so much firmament. The Lord say, "Well, this here ain't getting us nowhere." He say, "I got to get me some men to drain off some of this here firmament." And he look around, and old Gable say, "Well, it ain't no use, Lord, because there ain't no place to drain it to." So the Lord say, "Well, it looks like I got to pass another miracle." Said, "It look like every time I comes to a fish fry, I got to be passing all these miracles." So this time he say, "Let it be the earth to hold all this firmament." And there was the earth, and the firmament runned into the Suwannee River, all the rivers and the creeks and the ditches and the lakes and the oceans, because firmament ain't nothing but a fancy name for water. And there was the land, all left over, lots of dry land left over. And he say, "Well," he say, "I got to pass another miracle and get somebody to work this here land. Because you know good as me that this here land ain't going to work itself." And he look around, and all them angels was mighty busy. And old Gable, he say, "Now, Lord, don't look at me." He say, "I can't do none of that plowing." He say, "I got to practice on my horn." So the Lord say, "Well, I'm going to fix that." So the Lord leaned down, and he pick up a handful of dirt, and he made it into a ball. And he say, "Let this dirt be mankind." And the dirt turned into a man. And the Lord say, "What's your name?" "Adam," say the man. "Adam which?" say the Lord. "Just plain Adam," say the man. "You married?" "Married? I ain't studying the women." "Yeah," say the Lord. "Well, I'm going to change that. I ain't going to have no single men's running around on my land. They stay up all night. Next day, they's too sleepy to work." So, the Lord put old Adam back to sleep, and he took out a rib, and he turned that rib into a woman named Eve. And when he wake up the next morning, there was Miss Eve with her head on his pillow. And he say, "Where you come from, gal?"
And she say, "No matter where I come from, I'm here, ain't I?"
So Adam and Eve got married and settled down to raise a crop for the Lord. And one fine morning, the Lord come a-walking down the big road, and there was Sis Eve out in the fence rows a-picking blackberries. And he say, "Good morning, Sis Eve." And she say, "Good morning, Lord." And the Lord say, "Picking a few blackberries?" She say, "Yeah, I'm going to make old Adam a blackberry cobbler." And he say, "Well, that's just fine. You go ahead and make them cobblers and them pies." And he say, "Pick all the blackberries and the blueberries and the bananas and the pineapples and the zucchinis, whatever. But just one thing I don't want you to touch, and that's the apple orchard, because the apples is scarce this here year, and they's going to bring a good price in the fall." Well, now, it just goes to show you. She say, "Yes, sir, that's all right. I don't think Adam like apples much." So the Lord went walking on down the road, and no sooner do he go than a great big old Highland moccasin come wiggling through the fence. And she say, "Look at there, at that rascal. I gotta mash his head in." And so she leaned down and she pick up a rock and she let that rock go. Well, now, you know good as me, there ain't never been a woman who could throw straight. So, instead of mashing that snake's head in, she done hit the apple tree, and down come a great, big, old, juicy red apple. And she say, "Now, look at that, what I done. I done knocked down that apple. And it's too pretty for the hogs to eat." So she pick it up, and she took a bite. It don't taste like much. I think I'll see if old Adam want to eat it. So she took that apple, and she went out where Adam was plowing the corn. And she say, "Look what I done brung you." And he said, "Now, gal, you know good as me that I don't like apples." She say, "No, you don't ever like nothing I give you." And she blubbers up and commences to cry. Well, now, you know when a woman turn on her tears, she gonna get some action from the man. And he say, "Oh, give me that apple. I'll eat it." And so old Adam, he took the apple and he ate it, and Eve dried up her tears. He say, "See, I'm going to eat it. I'm going to buy you a new dress." And he bought her a new dress. And the Lord heard all about it, and he was mighty mad, because he wasn't going to have nobody on his place which stole his apples. So he put old Adam and Eve off the place, and the last I heard, they was down on the levee trying to get a job at 6 bits a day. And with no more ado, let's welcome Gamble Rogers.
Gamble, you got a cup on the collar.
I'll tell you. How are you all this morning?
Did you have a good trip?
Yes, ma'am. All right, let's see. We need this a little bit higher. Yeah. still. What we need to do is slide this rascal down some and slide this one up some. Thank you. Hello, hello. Hello, hello. All right. I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to be at White Springs on Memorial Day weekend with no rain. I also, Cousin Thelma's going to get tired of me telling this story, but it's pretty hard to follow a trooper of experience. And to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, now you folks see a certain side of Cousin Thelma, and what a lot of people don't realize is that a professional performer has to be very tractable and adaptable. And Cousin Thelma and I have always kidded each other a little bit. She says, now when you play at White Springs, don't you tell any of those nightclub stories. And sometimes my tongue slips a little bit, but usually I follow that injunction pretty well. But what I want to point out to you is that one time I was working in a nightclub, and Cousin Thelma came, and I asked her if she wouldn't. Right at the end, I surprised her, and I introduced her and said, well, come on up and do a story. You know, and all these old drunks were in there and everything, and they all said, well, she had to get up, and she came up and said, well, what am I don't know what I can do. And then she proceeded to tell a story, which I doubt that she's ever told at White Springs. But what I want to tell you is she got a standing ovation from a smoke-filled room of old boozers, and they wouldn't let her off the stage. She had to tell another one. It was even better than the first one. So, now that's a trooper. I don't think you folks really can. I just want you to get it in perspective, because you might not be able to fully appreciate the lady's powers. At any rate, it's awfully good to be here, and it's an honor to be on the same stage with Cousin Thelma. I'd like to try and tone my participation down just a little bit and go back to my roots just a little bit. We're getting down toward the end of the festival here. This is one of the first songs that I ever played on the stage up here at White Springs in 1960. I hope you like it. It's just an old folk song.
Possum up in the simmon tree and the raccoon on the ground. Raccoon said, you son of a gun, shake them simmons down. Possum began to shake and then the simmons began to fall. Raccoon said, you son of a gun, I didn't want them all. Oh, little Liza, pretty little girl, my Liza Jane. How I love my pretty little girl, she died on the train. See, my Liza Jane, she met me at the door with her shoes and stockings in her hand and a pretty bare feet on the floor. Her head is like a coffee pot, her nose just like a spout. Her mouth is like an old fireplace with ashes all raked out. Oh, little Liza, pretty little girl, my Liza Jane. How I love my pretty little girl, but you can't get to heaven by riding on the train.
Well, you know, no performance up here would be complete without honoring Mr. Will McLean, Florida's Black Hat Troubadour. I've known Will for 19 and a half years. As you no doubt know, He's one of Florida's premier brim fishermen. A storyteller par excellence. A folklorist. And a man rich in spirits. Spirit. First time I ever met Will McLean, he invited me on a fishing junket in search of the elusive Florida shellcracker, a species of panfish not unlike the northern crappie. We went out and got in Will's ancient Chevrolet, and we headed off down the road. We'd been abroad for 3 minutes or more when Will allowed us how he had to stop and purchase what he referred to as some possibles. We got some eagle claw fish hooks and some split shot sinker and some shear pins and some monofilament leader and some 22 shorts and some wheel bearing grease and some baling wire and some Triscuits and Fritos and some Zweibach toast and Vienna sausage. Some anchovy paste and cream cheese with chives and some boot laces and $2 worth of gasoline. Some candle tallow. We headed off down the road, and we topped the last rise leading down to the lake itself, and there we saw laboring in the Florida sunlight a phenomenon rapidly disappearing from the face of this earth. A work gang. Now, you can call them a chain gang if you want, but there they were, sartorially resplendent in their prison-issue garb, studies in black and gray, working out in the Florida sunlight, raising their voices in spontaneous lyrical jubilation, just enthralled with the opportunity to work in such a health-giving circumstance with their pastoral tools of their chosen trades, scythes and bush hooks and double-bitted axes and shovels, raising their voices in spontaneous concert, as I say, singing those old ethnic work chants and folk songs, occasionally raising their arms and hands in gestures non-related to the work at hand in the direction of the passing motorist and the guard. As we drew abreast of this rustic tableau, Will McLean slowed the automobile, snatched up his pack of Camel cigarettes, wound down the window, hailed the prisoners, and lofted the smokes out in their direction. I said, "Well, you just quit smoking again, didn't you?" "He's always quitting. We'll be paddling down the Weikawa River." "Well, actually, I always paddle." Will sits up front where he can crack those cold ones. All of a sudden, I'll see his latissimus dorsi tautin' beneath his work shirt. And Will McLean, a taut latissimus is tantamount to grave moral flux and decision-making. His arm will fling outward with purpose, plunge heron-like to his pocket. He'll pull forth his cigarettes, hold them disdainfully at arm's length, swizzling them about in the crystalline waters of the river and raise them out and squeeze them until a turgid tar-like excrescence extrudes from the cellophane of the package, slog them into the bottom of the boat, say, "Hell, Jim, I just quit smoking again." I say, "Right on." 5 minutes later, I'm paddling his backsliding tail up the river to get more camels. I've been doing it 20 years. Well, I thought he'd quit when he threw the cigarettes to the prisoners, but he explained to me that if you throw your smokes to a chain gang, the guard will let the men knock off and take a smoke break. Now, isn't that a nice thing to know? Yeah. Well, they deserve that. Here's a song that Will wrote about the first man sentenced to die in Florida's electric chair, and his name was Abraham Washington. He was sentenced to hang, but the hanging law was repealed, so they conveyed him to Rayford Penitentiary and strapped him into the chair. And the warden and the guard fell into a 45-minute argument over who should have the privilege of pulling the switch and send the man to his ultimate reward. They argued so for 45 minutes while the prisoner literally sweated blood in the chair. At the end of this disgraceful debate, an early ACLU legal type came thundering into the chambers wearing a pair of jogging shoes, carrying 5 Hermann Hesse novels in one hand and a bowl of granola in the other. Pointed out to these idiots, it's illegal to keep a man waiting for his execution beyond a certain amount of time. What they had done constituted cruel and unusual punishment, so they had no recourse but to unstrap the prisoner and turn him loose. That's how the first electrocution in Florida ended. Ladies and gentlemen, from the pen of Florida's Black Hat Troubadour, Mr. Will McLean, The Ballad of Abraham Washington. There was a man named Washington, his first name Abraham, and the judge he vowed he'd ride the rope into the promised land. Before he met his fateful doom, the hanging law was dead. Took him down to Rayford Town to the electric chair instead. They strapped him to the electric chair, and there while he was waiting, the warden and the county sheriff were talking and debating which one of them should pull the switch and send this man to hell. No decision could be reached, in prison he would dwell. They took him from the electric chair, his sweat had turned to blood. They told him that his life was spared, and from his eyes did flood the salty tears of gratefulness. It happens to all men. Down on his knees he made this vow to never sit again. I don't blame him. One day a prison gang did ride by pastures that were green. A mother and her baby strolled so happy and serene. Suddenly a vicious bull did charge his frightened wife, and Abraham, he jumped the fence and he saved the woman's life. A pardon full for Washington, his first name Abraham, who made a vow to never sit again while on this land. The last accounts of Washington, the day was cold and wet. Was Abraham, if he kept your vow, and he said, I ain't set yet.